WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington. Welcome to the Politics Hour starring Tom Sherwood. I'm Kojo Nandi. Tom Sherwood is our resident analyst. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. Tom Sherwood, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Looking forward to today?
Yes, I am.
Today we'll be talking with three candidates all running for the Arlington County Board, Audrey Clement, Eric Gutschall, and Charles McCullough. Before we go there, Tom Sherwood, a few other issues. That 45-foot statue of a naked woman that was destined to be on the National Mall is apparently not going to happen. It was rejected, even though at first, because the height of the statue exceeded the 45-foot limit that was permitted to go to 47 feet. But then the National Park Service apparently changed its mind and decided that it was too tall. And the organizers are still trying to get the statue on the mall. It's my understanding that you have been looking into this.
Yes, this is part of a celebration that is supposed to take place November the 10th through, I think, the 12th, 3 days. And this 45-foot statue was to come from San Francisco as part of a centerpiece for several things they're going to do there for women's rights and respect for people, all the things you'd want. But the Park Service was all aboard for this in the preliminary discussions, and suddenly, a couple of weeks ago, they got cold feet, apparently, and then they decided, no, you can't do this. It's slightly too tall, just by a foot or two. That would hurt the grass, although the grass around the Washington Monument is pretty much weeds instead of grass. And it would, quote, detract from the views of the Washington Monument. So I did talk to some of the organizers. They are considering legal action to challenge the ruling by the Park Service. They also are considering a fallback position of doing something that won't be this statue of this naked woman, but it will be a statue close to 40-something feet tall on which they will project white sides with screens with various messages. But it's not decided yet what is going to happen on November the 10th.
Okay, let's go down to Virginia, where the latest poll apparently shows, or one of the latest polls apparently shows, that Democrat Ralph Northam has broken 50% and leads the Republican opponent, Ed Gillespie, who is looking at about 43%. Cliff Hira, the Libertarian, is polling at about 3%. Another poll by Hampton University seemed to suggest that Gillespie might be ahead of Northam, but questions have been raised about that poll. What's it looking like to you?
Well, it's an undecided race. Ralph Northam, the Democrat, has been leading the various polls throughout the campaign from anywhere from a few percentage points to as much as 10 or 11. This one poll from Hampton University showing Mr. Gillespie ahead is considered an outlier and had something like 27% of the people undecided, which is an extraordinary number this close to the election. I think if you talk to both the Democrats and the Republicans, is that Mr. Gillespie, who nearly beat Mark Warner in 2014 and just barely won the nomination against Corey Stewart,
correct,
is a known quantity. He's respected by a lot of people in Virginia, but whether he'll overcome the Trump effect in the state — Trump is not very popular in the state of Virginia — the race is considered a toss-up by most people, with Northam a slight edge.
Well, Mr. Gillespie does not seem to be trying to overcome the Trump effect any longer, because he just retweeted one of Mr. Trump's tweets supporting him, and he has been running the kinds of ad that resulted in a reprimand today in the editorial pages of the Washington Post, making all kinds of charges against Ralph Northam, including that he's apparently in his collusion with Governor Terry McAuliffe, that he was allowing very dangerous convicts to be able to get firearms.
Well, Mr. Gillespie is a classic Republican, traditional Republican. Comes from the traditional wing of the Republican Party. Corey Stewart ran against him for the governor's race and nearly beat him with a Trump-like campaign. Corey Stewart has yet to really formally endorse Mr. Gillespie. The Democrats would love it if President Trump would come into the state and campaign for Gillespie and scare some of the moderates and independents. But Gillespie's trying to do a tightrope walk here. He wants to appeal to traditional Republicans who know him well and like him, but he needs the Trump wing of the Virginia Republican Party to come out and vote for him, and he hasn't given them many reasons to, except for the last few weeks, these hard-edged campaigns saying that Ralph Northam is soft on crime and MS-13 gang, and is where he's trying to get those right Republicans to come out and vote. It's not certain that they will.
We're going to see what happens. And you can't have a conversation on the Politics Hour without discussing the politics of Metro. It would appear that the brouhaha between Metro Chair Jack Evans and Maryland Governor Larry Hogan has encountered, if you will, a temporary respite, so to speak. Mr. Evans wanted to change the board committee structure of Metro, and the Maryland governor apparently didn't particularly want that. However, Mr. Evans promised to block the Purple Line, the land deal for the Purple Line, if that happened. None of these threats apparently were carried out, but from where I sit, it looks like if Mr. Evans got what he wanted, and that was the board structure has changed. There are now four committees instead of seven, which was what he wanted. The deal apparently also changed the election time for the board so that Mr. Evans won't serve another 6 months as chairman after the approved time. But it would appear that, as far as I'm concerned, it looks like Jack Evans won this round.
I think so. I talked to him. He's in Paris, not vacationing, I might add. He's over there with Mayor Bowser. They're trying to get the gay games, Olympic games in Washington.
Yes, for 2022. They're probably working very hard, yes.
They're doing the pitch tomorrow, and the announcement will be made on Monday, whether the city gets it or whether it'll be some other place. But Jack Evans basically did win. I never thought that Jack Evans would vote to scuttle the Purple Line of land swaps that needed in Maryland in order to get the Purple Line construction moving forward. But Evans was also insistent that he said, we've got to change some of the governing structure of the board as it is now because it's not working well. He wanted fewer committees, get things decided faster. But these are skirmishes. I never thought he would sink the Purple Line, but he says he would have if they had sunk his plan to reduce the number of committees. None of this gets to what? The repair and operation of Metro.
Dedicated funding.
But the Metro still needs, whether Governor Hogan likes Jack Evans or not, or whether Jerry Connolly in Virginia fusses about Jack Evans or not, Maryland and Virginia at some point have to decide how they're going to fund Metro because they're facing huge run-ups in the budget. And the jurisdictions, and we'll get to our candidates here in a moment, the Virginians don't have the money to pay for it, and Maryland doesn't want to pay for it. And the district keeps pushing a 1% sales tax. But after all these skirmishes that we just talked about, the issue is how are you going to fund Metro going forward?
The moment has arrived for us to get to our candidates. Allow me to introduce them. Eric Gutschall is the Democratic candidate running for the Arlington County Board. He's chair of the Arlington County Planning Board. Eric Gutschall, thank you for joining us.
I'm pleased to be here.
Audrey Clement is a longtime Arlington civic activist running as an independent for the Arlington County Board. Audrey Clement, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Charles McCullough is the second is a consultant. He's a self-described progressive independent candidate also running for the Arlington County Board. Charles McCullough, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here, Kojo. Great to see you, Tom.
Again, if you have questions or comments, 800-433-8850. You can go to our website, kojoshow.org. Watch the live video stream. Ask a question or make a comment. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. It seems this race is a choice among three candidates, all on the left. Eric, you identify as a Democrat. Charles is a progressive independent. Audrey, you are independent. And in the past, have described yourself as a Green candidate. Audrey, I'll start with you. This is your sixth run at a seat. You've said you aim to break the two-party system, and more specifically, the hold of the Democratic Party on the county board. If residents are electing Democrats, what's the issue?
Well, I think I'm running for county board because
you're not going to read that, are you?
Arlington faces several crises that county board has failed to address.
Wait, Audrey, you really can't read your statement there. You need to talk to us. I'm sorry. I do this with all the candidates who come in and start reading from notes. We really are having a conversation here, and I apologize for interrupting, but I would not want you to read a statement. Can you just tell us why you're running?
Yes, I'm running because the county faces several crises that the county board, the Democratic-controlled county board, has not adequately addressed, including overcrowded schools, loss of green space, an office vacancy rate that is double the historic average. I am a fiscal hawk, and if I get elected, in addition to addressing those issues, I'm going to pledge to the voters no more tax rate increases while I'm sitting on the board.
Are you fundamentally opposed to the basic two-party system that seems to exist both in Arlington and around the country? Is that what you're trying to break through here, what you see as a Democratic stranglehold on the county?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm opposed to the two-party system, whether it is a Democratic-controlled jurisdiction or a Republican-controlled jurisdiction. I'm unhappy with both major parties. My politics right now I would describe as centrist, and I am concerned about the fact that both major parties are largely controlled by ideologues pushing them far to the left, far to the right, and away from the issues that are of greatest concern to the voters.
Tom Turbin.
Well, since we started with you, we'll stay with you. This is your sixth campaign for a public office. Since 2011, you ran in 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015, you didn't, I guess there were no elections, 2016, and now 2017. You're running to replace Jay Fassett, who served on the board 20 years. Do you think he did a good job?
Well, on some issues, I agree with Jay. He definitely had more, his leanings were more green than other members of the board, but I want to give you an example of the problem with Jay. In 2013, when I ran against him, he was on the bandwagon to ban plastic bottles. I don't know if you remember that, but he wanted to ban the distribution of bottled water in Arlington County because he correctly pointed out that it's extremely wasteful and degrading to the environment. But he also, this year, jumped on the bandwagon to recruit Nestle as a corporate tenant in Arlington. Nestle is the largest manufacturer of bottled water in the world.
Okay, well, he's not running, so that's good. In that race against Jay Fassett in 2013, he got 38,000 votes and you got 18,000.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Charles, you have said you are running in part to restore the Arlington Way. That's a phrase we hear a lot about the county. What does the Arlington Way mean for you, and how did you go about restoring it?
Right. The Arlington Way is when government and citizens are working hand in hand to make policy that is reflective of the needs of our community, and that's not happening. Too often now, development is meaning displacement. It doesn't have to mean that. When I go up North County and South County, what I'm hearing is, Charles, We're being involved in all these meetings, but decisions seem to be predetermined, or we're not involved in these meetings at all. So that's what I'm talking about in my campaign.
Is
meaningful.
Is that a change from what existed in the past? Is that an abandonment of the Arlington Way, and why do you think it's being abandoned?
Unfortunately, this is almost status quo, and that's why I am running as an independent progressive. You know, one of our great board members, Charles Monroe, when he served, his platform was very similar in identifying these same situations about needing to be more meaningfully included. In fact, the person who had this position before Jay, Ellen Bozeman, she's one of our longest serving board members. Even she identified the fact that our county was growing even at that time, and we need to have more people involved. So what's kind of been the thing that's kind of held this as an issue? Because we've been so entrenched in one-party politics. So this is our opportunity to break that by having a progressive, independent voice, someone who can speak truth to power, someone who's not held down by any certain party ideologies.
Well, what example? Some people think the People's Republic of Arlington has more meetings and more community made than anything in the region. It's such an important, it's a little county. A lot of people don't realize it's only like 26.2
Mm-hmm.
Cares about the point two. The district is like 68, but you got, and
with
you only have a couple
land,
hundred thousand people there. But a lot of commuters and a lot of people through there. You've got a lot of business there. What has the board? What one major decision has the board made Mr. McCullough, that you disagree with and you think was done with backroom politics instead of involving the people?
Oh, my goodness, do we have time? So I will start with Western.
I asked one.
Let's start with then the Western Roslyn issue. So this is one that what's interesting in this one, we can see many citizens coming together. Up in Western Roslyn, up on Wilson Boulevard, where we're now building a new school. Okay, so in this Western Roslyn plan, as was being developed, the community was invited in. They said they were part of this process, decide where firehouse would be placed, where school would be placed, and then as this process is going through, come to find out there was already a letter of intent that the county already signed with a major developer that pretty much already decided what would happen.
Did it mirror what the public wanted?
Unfortunately, it did not mirror the public. The public wanted to preserve park space. The public wanted to have a say in where the firehouse was placed. They wanted to be meaningfully included. Okay. It's these type of actions which cause people to doubt whether they're really being meaningfully included. And someone needs to be there outside of the system, outside of the party ideology, to say, look, let's pay attention to what's happening in our communities.
Eric Gutschall, your question of given the form of an email from Carla, a longtime resident, who says, I've personally seen how once affordable apartments have been torn down in favor of expensive million-dollar homes and townhouses, the most recent example of which is the new townhouse development on 11th Street close to Westover Park. To say that Arlington has a real livable, affording housing policy is a joke if you are poor or working class. What can you say that's different, and what would make a difference for families who struggle to live here?
Yeah, thank you, Carla. I actually think that the ability of the middle class to afford to stay in Arlington is actually one of the principal issues that's going to define this era. And I think it's defined this race, and it's going to define the board moving forward. And what I've advocated for is that we need to update our old-fashioned zoning ordinance so that we can allow the market to better deliver the kinds of housing that could be in a place like that, rather that could preserve some of those units that are there, take some of the density that might be available, because that's the market that is going after that additional density that exists by right on those sites, meaning they don't need any extra special permission. But we could use those market forces to allow developers to create housing that would be for young families that are starting out, seniors, and everybody in between. And the thing is that we are not going to subsidize our way to mass affordability. The only way we're going to get there is if we update our old-fashioned zoning ordinance. So I would absolutely agree in this specific instance, the case that Carla brings up, that we have not done what we need to do, and that's why I'm running on a missing middle housing policy.
My follow-up question comes from Jack in Arlington, Virginia. Jack, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Sure. I would like to ask Eric, how many millions his housing corporation will make converting Arlington's single-family homes into the apartment buildings, bed and breakfasts, and de facto motels, which he advocates in his housing platform? Thank you.
I recognize that voice very much, and that's not Jack, but we'll go with that.
Well, if you recognize it, you can out him. You can do that.
Do you know who it is?
It's Mr. Jim Jerez, a frequent attendee of Arlington's civic business. And I have to say that
is he known by Jack? Jim Jack? I mean, that's kind of common. Is he known by friends as Jack?
He always registers himself as a public speaker under the name Jim. I don't think that's important. I was just saying that as a little aside. I think that Mr. Jerez actually does serve a purpose in the community, and that he keeps everyone on their toes. And so he has raised this issue before of that the fact that I own a home improvement business could somehow create a conflict of interest for me were it to serve on the board. Currently, as chair of the Planning Commission, I have discussed this issue because there are development issues that come before the Planning Commission that I have to vote for. And I have the same rules to follow, same laws to abide by. I've discussed this with the county attorney. I am very confident that there is no conflict of interest, that my home improvement company, my business, and this is not a plug for me, but we are based on helping people to take care of their homes. We do have a remodeling division, but I see no future in tearing down homes. As a matter of fact, I've gone out of my way to foster a market where we help seniors to stay in their homes and where we help people to improve their existing homes, not to tear them down.
That's the Clarendon Home Services Company. Is that right?
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
I knew exactly you didn't want to be clear.
That was not intended as a plug.
But you want to make zoning changes. There is a move to have more rental housing and single-family homes. And how do you accommodate? Some 65%, I think, of the population in Arlington lives in multifamily housing, about 65%, right?
Sounds right.
You're growing. It's been a 20% population growth in the last, 20 years. You're growing. You don't have any place to put people. What change would are you talking about that would make it easier to accommodate workforce housing?
Just one example. Sure. And I think it's important to note that not only if it's 65% now that lives in multifamily, moving forward, we're not going to make any new single-family homes because there's no more land in Arlington
County.
You're
out of land.
So the vast preponderance of any new growth is going to be in multifamily housing. So what the missing middle is all about, you got to think of like European-style flats. You got to think of eightplexes, fourplexes, cottage clusters. There's all kinds of housing forms that exist around the country and around the world that we don't get in Arlington because we have a very 1950s suburban-style zoning ordinance. So I'm talking about places along our major transportation corridors. We want to create walkable communities. And these are places where you see, like along Lee Highway, for example, huge opportunity there, where you see old used car lots, old strip malls, underdeveloped land. There's a reason that land is underutilized, and it's because the zoning ordinance doesn't allow much. And where it does allow things to happen, it usually ends up being luxury townhomes. I have nothing against my neighbors who live in luxury townhomes. They're great people. I don't think we need more luxury townhomes in Arlington.
But you do have single-family residential communities. You're not suggesting to allow a person in a single-family residential community to take his or her home and turn it into three apartments?
No, absolutely not. There is
what people fear.
And I understand that fear.
Ancillary dwellings and all those fancy words you use in zoning meetings.
Sure. And the accessory dwelling unit, which is something that's in front of the county board right now, in front of the Planning Commission and the county board, has to do with allowing somebody to rent out something like rent out your basement, or something that's typically called like a granny flat. And we're looking at expanding and allowing a detached accessory dwelling. So that would be like a little unit over your garage.
Our listeners, we're talking to three candidates for the Arlington County Board, and we are halfway through the show already. So I'm going to admonish you to try to keep your responses brief as we go forward here. Audrey Clement is a longtime Arlington civic activist. She is running as an independent for the Arlington County Board. Charles McCullough is a consultant. He's a self-described progressive independent candidate running for the board. And Eric Gutschall is the Democratic candidate running for the board. He's the chair of the Arlington County Planning Board. So if you have questions or comments, call now 800-433-8850. You can send email to kodra@wamu.org. Charles McCullough, you wanted to jump in here.
I did. In fact, you know, a lot of people say, well, what does a progressive independent really mean? And I think in the context of affordable housing, we can really see what the difference is. So we have an opponent talking about, well, we'll just leave it up to the market. The market's what got us into it. That is the status quo thinking we need to get beyond. And to say we can't subsidize our way to the answer, no one's talking about subsidizing our way to the answer, but we are talking about, and I am talking about, having a multifaceted approach. It is morally right to help, and we shouldn't see that as subsidizing our way to the answer. The fact of the matter is, missing middle housing, it's all well and good, but as someone who lives in a little 500-square-foot plot in Arlington, I'm here to tell you that it's that underlying land that makes it expensive. That's why my place in the 10 years I've lived in Arlington has gone from singles living in 500 square feet in my apartment building to now full-on families. That's why I'm proposing more than just building, but using new programs funded by developers, making sure they pay their fair share to fund vouchering and grant programs.
Well, Audrey Clement, I wanted to get the budget, but go ahead.
Yes, well, this issue is extremely important to me because I just learned the other night that my building is slated for demolition. I live in a garden apartment in the Westover section of Arlington. My building is slated for demolition early in 2018. And if it is demolished, it'll be one of nine buildings that have been demolished and replaced with luxury townhomes.
What do you think should happen instead?
All right, there's two things that need to happen. First, a petition to designate this neighborhood of something like, I don't know, maybe three dozen affordable apartment buildings. This neighborhood has to be designated local historic to prevent their demolition. And after that occurs, then the suggestion that Eric has made needs to be placed. It needs to be adopted by county board, which is to change the zoning laws in such a way as to encourage landlords to build out, to build up, and to renovate, to provide them with taxes and other.
So you agree with Eric's solution?
Absolutely.
I guess the reason you're running against him is because he's a Democrat.
Not exactly.
We disagree on other things.
There are other issues.
Allow me to go to the budget. The county may be facing.
Kojo, can I just correct something very quickly? I'll be very quick. That Mr. McCullough has said that I would prefer to just leave this to the market. This is very critical because actually what I'm talking about is not just leave it to the market. It's about using the market to create the housing that we want. And when Mr. McCullough says that developers should pay their fair share, I hear that's the market, because who is the market? It's developers.
Again, defending developers. We're only charging developers one-third of what they could be charged under state law when they decide not to provide affordable housing. I'm going to be a board member who's going to stand up to that. I'm not in the pocket of developers.
Who is in the pocket of developers? Saying your opponents are?
I'm saying that I have not seen a willingness for the county board to stand up and put people first in the face of developers like they should.
So, in the pocket of developers and putting people first are two campaign cliches.
No, they're not with me.
They are cliches, whether you mean them or not. Okay.
Point of information.
Information, that sounds like we're in some kind of government.
legislative chamber.
In answer to your question about how the Democratic Party facilitates developers or is in the pocket of developers in the county, I want to point out that for, I believe, the past 5 years, Mr. Gutchall has been on the Planning Commission, and he is currently chair of the Planning Commission. And over the last 2 years, I went through a number of major site plan development projects that were put forth by developers in the county, and the Planning Commission approved every single one but one. And these are major site plans with major impacts. Charles McCullough discussed one of them, but there are other major, even larger site plan development projects that the Planning Commission, you know, it tweaks some of these proposals, but it has basically rubber stamped every one of them.
We started the conversation about the Arlington Way, and I would suggest to you that all of those that came forward through the process of the Arlington Way had, by and large, had general community support. Wasn't that there weren't issues around them?
The county may be facing a funding shortfall of up to $13 million in the fiscal year 2019 budget. Preliminary projections show revenue will grow by 2.9%, but expenditures, they're growing by 4%. The county board voted to raise property taxes this year by 1.4%. How should this shortfall be addressed? And if further tax increases or cuts are needed, where should they fall, Charles McCullough?
You know, it's interesting. I was just at the board meeting just this past week. And
remember brevity.
Yes. And indeed, in around 10:30, when the issue of this budget issue came up and what our expenditures look at our closeout this year again, we had $15 million left over. That $15 million could actually go to solving that shortfall that you see next year, avoiding paying taxes. And that $15 million is less than what we've had in previous years. Some years, in 2012, I believe it was as high as over $30 million.
Jay Fassett, who's leaving the board, who's retiring from the board, gave a State of Arlington speech, and he says the county is budget-wise is doing well. It's growing. There are new jobs. There are new people. There's something like an 89% approval in some survey. What differently do you want to do? I mean, putting people first is a slogan, but all these things, the planning board, it seems to me you have a zillion meetings. Things do get done. Some people win, some people lose. But overall, Arlington is seen as a pretty urban, progressive county. But you guys are progressive, but you sound like it's a backwater.
Jay Fassett says you are a victim of your own success.
Well, I would like to address that question. First of all, this county actually had a budget surplus of this year of $18 million. Of that, the county itself admits that $5.5 million came from the 1.5-cent tax increase that you mentioned just a moment ago. In other words, that $5.5 million tax increase was not necessary. In addition,
what is the budget for Arlington?
Well, it's over $1 billion a year. Okay, yes. It's about $1.2 billion.
$1.2 billion. So we're talking about $5 million here. That's serious money, but that we're talking about a $1.2 billion budget.
That may be a small amount by the county standard. Certainly, it has over $71 million in restricted funds, $175 million in reserves and restricted funds. So it certainly didn't need that $5.5 million, but the taxpayers did, and they're not going to get it back. In fact, the money that they paid out this year unnecessarily is going to be used to fund a whole slew of pet projects in the county's closeout process. I think there's something wrong with the county's closeout process in general, that in most jurisdictions that I know of, including the federal government, money that's not spent in the current year is reallocated in the next year's budget. It is not spent in the current year.
Mr. Gutschall, you ran in 2016 against Libby Garvey. You were here in June of last year for the debate, and you had said that it was kind of a vote of no confidence against her, and that that you were better qualified, and that the county was dragging. These are all the things you said as a candidate last year, dragging our feet on transportation, housing affordability is not moving fast enough. Libby Garvey has endorsed you this time. What happened?
Well, I think what happened I'm proud to have Libby's endorsement this year, and I look forward to working with her. What happened is I think that the campaign that we had last year, it shows that democracy does work, and it does work in Arlington, even within the Democratic Party, that I was able to bring ideas. Nobody was talking about missing middle housing at all before I brought it up in the campaign last year. And now it's on the work plan of county staff. It's a central element of what we're moving forward with in terms of addressing housing affordability. And as far as budgets go, we are still not moving as fast as I would like on Columbia Pike, transit on Columbia Pike. But it is in the CIP, which was voted on after that debate.
What is the CIP?
Thank you. Capital Improvement Plan. So that's our 10-year layout of what we're going to spend money on for capital improvements, which includes, among many things, transit. And that was voted on by the board, including Ms. Garvey, after that debate. And I'd like to take just a little bit of credit in moving that conversation forward and making sure that we weren't dragging our feet.
Well, you mentioned transportation. People talk a lot about the divide between North and South Arlington. The streetcar was pitched as a way to bridge those economic divides. That project's been canceled by the board. What else do you think board members could do to bridge the economic gaps between these two parts of the county? We got an email from Gloria who says, I went to one public meeting and I feel like no one is representing South Arlington, which is historically black. On the Joint Facilities Advisory Commission board, there was no one from South Arlington. You?
Well, actually, I'm from, I guess, Central Arlington, but unlike the other candidates, I don't own a car, and I use my bike. I use ART Transit. That's Arlington Rapid Transit. I use Metro everywhere I go. There are transit routes that run north-south in Arlington, and they're very convenient. They're the 41, the 42, the 43, and the 45 bus. Now, this is not to say that Arlington Rapid Transit can't be improved. It can be improved. But the way I would improve it is by launching an advertising campaign, perhaps in conjunction with Metro, to get people out of their cars and on the bus.
They like their cars.
I know. That's the principal issue. Even in Arlington, which probably has the highest concentration of subway stations of any jurisdiction in the metropolitan area, we still only have about 10% of the population commuting by public transit to work.
We'd like to hear you guys talk about Metro a little, because a lot of people, including me, don't like to go down into the ground to use Metro when you don't know when you're going to come up.
That's exactly the problem. So
we know the problems with Metro. What you do in terms of a dedicated funding source?
Right. As far as a dedicated funding source, I'm really looking forward to what LaHood is going to say. Right now, I didn't like what was...
That's former Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood.
I didn't like...
You don't have an idea yourself?
I do have an idea myself. Actually, the current funding formula right now, which makes sure that Virginia is actually paying a more equitable fare than what was proposed by Maryland, that's something right now that I can actually tangibly see, where if we can get something that has a percentage breakdown like that, I would be in support of it. Here goes my thing. It's not just about dedicated funding. It goes to something that you were saying, Tom, that we need to make sure that it's tied to real accountability for safety and service. At yesterday's meeting.
No, we're talking about we're one of the few jurisdictions in the country, in the world, that doesn't have a dedicated funding,
correct,
whether it's spent well or not. But the issue is, do you support the 1% sales tax region-wide to pay for Metro?
I don't believe that's the way to go.
What about you?
I'm leaning towards it. It is clear that what we have, this hodgepodge of funding measures every year to keep the system going, is not working.
However, I would attach strings to it. Well, Mr. Gutschall, would you support a 1% sales tax or some way, other way for you to have dedicated funding? Because the cost of Metro is going to jump dramatically next year for Arlington and everybody.
Exactly. And the solution cannot come from any one jurisdiction. It has to be a regionally agreed upon solution.
And the 1% sales tax in the region?
Yes. So if that is the regional solution, then I would be willing to support that. It's not necessarily my preference, because I think it gets to the existing funding formula that we have right now that looks at the ridership and the number of stations in each jurisdiction is a fair and equitable way to fund the system. And the sales tax is problematic with that regard. I would much rather also see us, this is a great opportunity, why we should be talking about maybe having a carbon tax that would do it. We could move the ball forward in other ways.
Jack Evans, the chairman of the Metro Board, says that next year Virginia, Maryland, and D.C. each have to put up $190 million more in funding for Metro, or that the thing could crash. So you don't have a long time to get new taxes in place, but how would $190 million is for all of Northern Virginia's people, not just Arlington. But that's a lot of money to come up with quickly.
It's an awful lot of money, and I support the principles that the Metropolitan Washington Council of Governments work panel adopted on this, which say that that the individual contributions of any one jurisdiction should not increase by more than 3% per year. I think that's a fair way to look at it. The bottom line, and we've got a serious governor's race going on here in Virginia, and everybody that's out there should know that whoever wins this gubernatorial race in Virginia is going to have a big influence on whether or not Virginia comes to the table. We've also got several very competitive races in the state delegates' house race, because the general assembly.
This is the Democrat speaking now.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But it's
super critical to in order to getting.
You
to
want
a,
to say your candidate's name for
in
governor?
Order to Ralph Northam. Thank you. In order to get to a regional solution, the General Assembly of Virginia,
right,
and the State House of Maryland, and in particular the governor of Maryland, along with Mary Bowser, have to come together. And we need a General Assembly and a governor that is looking for solutions.
It's not a complete conversation, though, if we just leave a conversation about WMATA, about funding. We also have to talk about service. The fact of the matter is, once we do find this dedicated funding system, we decide on how we do it. If the service stays the way it is, if we don't ask for better service, better safety, we're not going to have the riders we need.
If you ask for better service,
correct,
and you say, we're not going to provide a dedicated funding source until we get better service, and there's a relationship between the lack of a dedicated funding source and the service you're getting, what you're doing is having Metro stay in place.
Right. But
essentially,
we need to
tread water.
And I actually think I believe we're agreeing with each other, because I didn't say that we shouldn't have a dedicated funding system. But what I don't want us to get into is a situation where we forget or we do not have any sort of attachment between a dedicated
I don't think anybody's
stream.
About to forget
I
that.
I don't know anyone
point.
Wants to do that. Do you think the union should be reined in?
What I do think should happen is, I do think that with Metro Bus, with Metro Rail in Arlington County, we need to make sure, again, that once we talk about dedicated funding, that we also have a strong eye on service and accountability.
I just don't know how that makes sense. Charles is actually right about accountability.
Yes, I have one particular concern, and that is a decision by the current Metro Board, evidently, to shut off service regardless of whether there are late-night events in progress. I think this was unwise financially, because late-night events can bring in a lot of revenue, and of course it causes massive inconvenience to the people who attend.
Yeah, but late-night events, what Metro says is that if it has to do that, path without a dedicated funding source, then when are you going to get the repairs and service that you want to keep Metro running properly?
What Charles and I are saying is we need to have a piece of legislation in place that links the two. You provide us with these services, and you're going to get
this money. Do you want to reopen the Metro Compact?
Well, yeah, I think that's going to be necessary.
On to Aaron in Fairfax County. Aaron, your turn.
Yeah, good morning or good afternoon, Kojo. I having worked in Arlington and lived in Fairfax, I know the I-66, the 395, that whole area. And Arlington has exceptionally small streets, community streets within its community, more historic communities. How are we going to deal with residential flats or ancillary buildings on properties, renting them out, if it adds to congestion on community roads as a result of increased parked cars? It seems like we're shooting ourselves in the foot and not realizing it until, 10, 20 years down the road when nobody can get around community streets.
You raised two very interesting points, one about accessory dwelling and one about I-66. I had an opportunity to attend a meeting about I-66, and I think you're absolutely right that when these new HOV protected lanes come in, what we may see is a lot of traffic go off into communities. And what we need to do is we need to be prepared ahead of time to make sure we're working with communities so that we do have the necessary traffic abatement, whether it's through signage, whether it's through increased community presence. Even some neighborhoods have actually gone so far to work with apps like Waze to actually help them guide folks from away from
Waze
the smaller
neighborhoods. Waze doesn't guide you away from neighborhoods. No. Waze actually does exactly the opposite. It sends you right into the neighborhood with less traffic.
Tom, actually,
I use it. I know.
Tom, there's actually a community in San Francisco who's actually worked with Waze to prevent this problem from happening. Because you're right, it was happening because of Waze. So a community noticed it just outside San Francisco to work with Waze. But that actually doesn't go to your first part, which was about accessory dwellings. And that's the thing. Again, accessory dwellings are it's great that we're providing homeowners an opportunity to get another source of income, but we just have to make sure that if we do go down the accessory dwelling route, that we're able to maintain the character of our communities.
Audrey, you have said that Arlington needs a change in leadership because quote unquote smart growth and sustainable growth are not the same. Arlington does have a growing population, but what do you mean about the distinction between smart and sustainable?
All right, sustainable growth does not put a stop to population growth. What it does is it assesses and mitigates the impacts.
How?
The impacts are generally on schools, streets, parks, and public safety. Arlington County, with most of the site plan development projects that I mentioned to you earlier have been approved in the last 2 years, Arlington generally denies the impact on schools and transit. When it comes to schools, it uses a ridiculously low figure for estimating the number of students generated by each new apartment complex. And as far as streets, it generally says, well, the streets are already congested. They're not going to get much more congested. And that's usually the end of the discussion. So if I'm elected to county board, I'm going to require a fiscal impact analysis for every major site plan development project that assesses the impacts and whether it actually benefits the county.
Eric Gutschall, you are chair of the Arlington County Planning Board already. What I hear is that the Arlington County Planning Board and the board itself seems to have a certain lack of foresight about this growing population and how it's going to accommodate it, especially on its roads.
Isn't it amazing that how all of this lack of foresight that's won many awards from the planning community and has led to many of the problems that we're talking about here? We've created such a great place to live, work, do business, send your kids to school, raise a family, that
and
everybody
that may
wants
be
to
the
be
problem.
There.
You're
and
trying
so now,
to manage success.
So, yeah, exactly. This is what it's about. And I want to address actually the caller's question because parking and traffic is a proxy for many things that come with development. And it's all about livability. And I would argue that sustainability is a key feature of livability. You need to have access to nature and parks and open space. You want to have walkable communities. And what we're doing as we move into the future, and I think Arlington has done a great job of planning, and I would want to continue that legacy and that tradition, is to look at how do we create walkable, livable communities. We are going to continue to grow, and there is no more room for more cars and more single occupancy vehicles. But we are also on the verge of a transportation revolution. Look at what's happened in just the last couple of years with the advent of things like Uber and Lyft, and we've got perhaps driverless autonomous cars coming soon. We've got bike share is exploding, and we've got now different kinds of bike share. We got people who are walking all the time. I actually commend Audrey that she lives a car-free lifestyle.
Well, thank
and there's
you.
Gonna,
thank
and,
you, Eric.
It's very admirable, and there's going to be a lot more of that. So we want to give people options. It's not about telling anyone that they can't drive anywhere. It's about giving more people more options to not have to drive.
Got an email from Brian. The county board appeared to completely disregard community opposition to the new $22 million homeless shelter for a residential area in Courthouse. This new shelter increased our homeless population and led to an increase in crime. A woman stabbed two people across the street. Further, our local park has become effectively closed off to the public as it is continuously lived in by homeless residents and is full of trash.
I'd love to answer that question. I opposed the new community, the new homeless shelter when it was built, not on the basis of need, but on the basis of cost, because I determined that the District of Columbia had constructed a similarly sized facility for half the cost. So I was really concerned about the cost of the time. But I also want to add to you, I am not surprised to hear that homeless continue not to be served. In fact, I'm currently housing a homeless man and have for the last 2 years who was evicted from the old Arlington homeless shelter in 2014. I currently house a homeless man.
Well, that's one out of hundreds. Where does planning, Ms. Gutshaw, where does that come in terms of the growing homeless population? The district takes care of a lot of people, but the suburbs have been a little bit slower to do so.
I would dispute the assertion that there's a growing homeless population in Arlington. I meant
that as a general urban problem.
The district would say that's because they're all coming here, but go ahead.
That's right.
Well, and I think that in Arlington we've done a great job, but we have an extraordinary social safety net. I spent 6 years on the board of Doorways for Women and Families that deals with family homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so I know a little bit what's going on and what a fantastic job we do of outreach. And I would say that most of the time, the vast majority of the time, if you see a homeless individual, and the families, unfortunately, are often hidden. You don't see them on the street. But if you see a homeless individual, they usually refuse care. And a lot of times it does have to do with mental health issues. And so there's a lot that needs to be done yet to address that. And I think that Arlington has a tremendous, rich tradition of excellent nonprofits, government support.
To speak to the issue of crime, though.
Fantastic.
We're talking about homelessness, and said crime.
Because respondent talked about crime.
I'm sorry,
crime,
I thought you were
happening
challenging what he said.
No. I wasn't challenging what Eric was saying on that
particular
point. We only
have about
point.
3 minutes left.
But what I was saying with regard to the snippet about crime that the caller was talking about, it goes back to something you're saying, Tom, about from Jay's point of view, saying that everything was hunky dory and great in Arlington.
From
such great heights. So if you actually kind of go and tunnel down, we can look at what the caller brings up something about crime, and actually in aggregate, crime is better. But actually, if you look at aggregated assaults, if you look at burglaries, those are up in Arlington. So one thing
crime
I talk
is down
about
57%
actually,
in the county.
Actually,
since
If you break down our crime rates for 2016, aggregate assaults are up from 144 to 177.
We were out of time for numbers.
Speaking of great heights, though, I want to get to this because we got an email from Bolton who says Arlington always prides itself on the good quality of life. Yet the council has washed its hands of resolving the noise problems with the new National Airport flight path. I now have to wear earplugs to sleep, and I can really sit in my backyard. The new flight path dramatically increased the duration and volume of noise and concentrates it. Why, Eric Gutshall, would I vote Democratic if the county can't reach out to the governor and the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority?
Well, I know that issue has been long debated and there's been work groups. My neighborhood of Lyon Park has a representative on a working group that is constantly assessing what to do about that. It's a very difficult situation. Most of the time when you hear noise, it's pilots who are violating the flight path, and they have various reasons why they can do exceptions.
Well, if elected to the board, can you do anything about that?
Very little.
No. The county board does not have control over the Metropolitan Washington Airport
Authority.
Being
realistic. Here finally is Diane in Arlington about another kind of problem.
I will be a voice and an advocate.
Diane, you have about 30 seconds. Diane?
Hello?
You have 25 seconds.
Okay, hello. Yes. I'm calling just to find out what the officials have in mind in order to work out the multi-million-dollar lawsuits that are coming their way regarding the flushing of wastewater into the storm drains.
Well, we
sewer problems, Charles McCullough?
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes.
Very quickly.
With regard to sewer problems and water problems, now the one water problem I'm familiar with is what we're dealing with over in Yorktown. I know we're dealing with a water
problem.
No,
this has to do with the wastewater treatment plant and going into Four Mile Run and then out into the Potomac, and some of the residents of Alexandria are concerned that it's creating pollution. I know that Arlington has a state-of-the-art, very advanced and very expensive, I'll add it, wastewater treatment plant. I don't know the very specifics of the issue other than what I just
described. And I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Eric Gutschall is the Democratic candidate. Audrey Clement, independent candidate. Charles McCullough II, independent candidate. Thank you all for joining us, and good luck to each and every one of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it for the show today, but we'd like your help online in shaping a show we've got in the works for next week. Virginians, we'd like to hear your voice for our upcoming show on your statewide election. What issue is driving your vote for governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, or any of the delegates? Record a 30-second response and email it to kojo@kojoshow.org with the subject line, Win My Vote. iPhone users, you can use the built-in voice memo app, and Android users, we like the audio recorder app that you can download. We may play it on the air next Tuesday or on November 7th during our election night special. In the meantime, don't forget to meet us back here Monday at noon. We'll be exploring why D.C. lawmakers are reviewing a controversial law that gives judges flexibility in sentencing young offenders. We'll also consider what's coming next in Maryland's medical marijuana program. Tom Sherwood, always a pleasure. Any big plans this weekend?
Quiet weekend.
Indeed, a rare quiet weekend for Tom Sherwood. He's a reporter for NBC4 and a columnist for the current newspapers. You all have a great weekend, and thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Michael Martinez, Ingelisa Schrobsdorf, Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, and Avery Kleiman. The engineer is Meg Bunting. Podcasts of all shows and audio archives are available at our website, kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.